The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia. My name is Jason Freeman, and tonight it is my honor to be here to introduce Chad L. Williams. Chad L. Williams is the author of Torchbearers of Democracy, African American Soldiers in the World War I Era, winner of the Liberty Legacy Foundation Award from the Organization of American Historians, the Samuel J. and Augusta Spector Professor of History and African and African American Studies at Brandeis University. He has earned fellowships from the Radcliffe Institute for Advanced Study at Harvard University, the Ford Foundation, and the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture. He is the co-editor of Charleston Syllabus, readings on race, racism, and racial violence, and he has contributed articles and opinion pieces to a variety of publications, including The Washington Post, Time Magazine, and The Atlantic. He joins us tonight with his latest work, The Wounded World, W.E.B. Du Bois and the First World War. In it, he draws from a deep pool of source material to recount the story of Du Bois's disillusionment with his country for its betrayal of Black American veterans of World War I. And he details the scholar activists' struggle to complete a book about these men's experiences in the military. A New York Times review praises The Wounded World thusly: "By rendering this story in such rich archival detail, Williams's book is a fitting coda to Du Bois's unfinished history of Black Americans and the First World War." Tonight, Professor Williams will be in conversation with Mia Bay, a scholar of American and African American intellectual, cultural, and social history. Professor Bay is the Roy F. and Jeanette P. Nichols Professor of American History right here at the University of Pennsylvania. Her books include The White Image in the Black Mind, African-American Ideas About White People, 1830 to 1925, To Tell the Truth Freely, The Life of Ida B. Wells, and Traveling Black, A Story of Race and Resistance, winner of the Bancroft Prize. She is currently finishing a book on the history of African-American ideas about Thomas Jefferson. So Philadelphia, please join me in welcoming tonight's guests.
Good evening. Thank you all for coming. Chad, it's really great to be with you here.
Yes.
We've known each other for many years, but haven't seen each other recently. And I recently finished your book, which I enjoyed very much. What I want to do today is kind of walk through the book and ask you some questions about it. So, I knew your previous book, The Torchbearers of Democracy, a book about World War I. And one of the things I'm curious about is, how do you get from a sort of military history to, I mean, you're still talking about World War I, mm-hmm. but it's a different approach.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening. Thank you, Mia, for being in conversation with me. Such a huge admirer of your work. I teach White Image in the Black Mind. Your work on Ida B. Wells is wonderful. Your most recent book deserves all the flowers and awards that it's received, so it's really quite an honor. This book actually really comes out of my first book, which began as my dissertation, and I have to tell you the story. So I'm doing research for my dissertation, which would become Torchbearers of Democracy, and I'm at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, where W.B. Du Bois's papers, the majority of his papers, are archived, and I'd seen a reference to Du Bois' World War I materials in the finding aid. And I had no idea what it was, but thought it might be interesting. I'm going to UMass, I might as well check it out. I go to the library, the appropriately named W.E.B. Du Bois Library, go to the reference desk and ask to see these Du Bois World War I materials. Sit down, not expecting much. The librarian returns with 6 microfilm reels. And at this point, I'm really intrigued. Okay, what could this possibly be? I load the first reel, and I see this manuscript, a manuscript by Du Bois on the Black experience in World War I. That, as it would turn out, was over 800 pages long. Exactly. In addition to this manuscript, all of Du Bois's research materials and the correspondence related to the project. I was completely overwhelmed. As I would learn, he worked on this book, which he titled The Black Man and the Wounded World, for over 20 years, never finished the book, and ultimately it was never published. And no other historian had talked about it. In all the works, all the scholarship on Du Bois's life, his intellectual contributions, this huge gap existed. Mm-hmm. And from that moment, I was hooked. I was obsessed with learning more about this book, what it was about, obviously why he didn't finish it, but also what it tells us, what it could potentially tell us about Du Bois himself, about his life, about his work, his intellectual development, his political evolution, and what it says about the broader struggle for freedom and democracy in the 20th century, particularly in relation to World War I and its legacies.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can see why you were fascinated, and I was really intrigued when your book came out because it was around the time I was teaching World War I. And when you teach World War I in African American history, one of the things, even though you don't know about this book, is you have to kind of deal with the fact that Du Bois writes this very influential editorial encouraging blacks to participate at World War I. And I think it's 1918. It's at a time when people are kind of debating, like, do we have enough investment in this country? Are we being treated well enough to kind of enlist? And there's been a lot of discussion about why he does that, what his motives are, and you kind of go through this. So it was really interesting to see you go through that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Du Bois writes arguably the most controversial editorial of his career in The Crisis magazine, which he was the editor for in July of 1918, titled Close Ranks. And in this editorial, he encouraged African Americans to set aside their special grievances, temporarily set aside their claims for civil rights, put aside their grievances when it came to lynching, when it came to Jim Crow discrimination, what you write about, segregation in public transportation, put aside all of the issues that African Americans were facing for the time being and support their country, close ranks with the allies and their fellow white Americans who were fighting for democracy. And he was heavily criticized for this editorial. He was accused of abandoning the cause of civil rights. He was accused by his harshest critics of being a traitor to the race. And I think to make sense of that decision that he makes to write an editorial like Close Ranks and to ultimately support the war, we have to really understand Du Bois' motivations and what he thought could ultimately come out of the war itself. He genuinely believed that the war was going to be a transformative moment in not just American democracy, but world democracy. That this was going to be a turning point in the history of African Americans and other peoples of African descent. But even more than that, as he writes about in his classic 1903 book, The Souls of Black Folk, this was going to be an opportunity to reconcile the double consciousness that black people faced of being black on the one hand and being American on the other, These two unreconciled ideals, these two warring ideals, as he writes, these two strivings in one dark body whose dogged strength alone keeps it from being torn asunder. The war was going to be the opportunity where black people can be fully American. He genuinely believed this. And ultimately, as I write in the book, he was wrong.
But he also had, he was also kind of gunning for some kind of position in the army. There's many possible things going on, right?
Certainly a lot of intrigue. So he writes Close Ranks at the same time that he's trying to get a captaincy in the military intelligence division of the War Department. So essentially he was going to be almost kind of like a spy, in the War Department. This is how caught up he was in the hyper-patriotism of the war, mm-hmm. right? How he believed that it was his duty as an American to serve his country, right? Even if it meant like taking this very controversial position in the War Department and receiving all the criticism, enduring all mm-hmm. the criticism that would come along with it. He believed that ultimately it would be worth it in the end.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, not to just assign, you know, motives to him. I think also there is the really interesting question of he has this interpretation of the war that is really about this is really a crucial moment for the history of, for global history, for the future of Africa, which is actually not mainstream. And mm-hmm. And I think one of the things your book does is really sort of force us to pay attention to it and think about it. But one of the things I wanted to ask you about it, he has the idea that there's African roots of the war, that there's sort of a question of imperialism that needs to be resolved from it, which is very different from, I mean, I think a lot of us just don't really understand the First World War all that well, but he has a notion about it. How mainstream is that notion? I mean, it certainly wasn't back then. Is it persuasive to you today?
Yeah, it was certainly not mainstream at the time. I mean, there were a few scholars, intellectuals, particularly on the left, who also saw the roots of the war as kind of grounded in imperialism and colonial competition amongst the different European belligerents. But Du Bois was really singular in his interpretation of the origins of the war and connecting it to Africa and other peoples of African descent. That it was the desire for colonies in Africa, it was the exploitation of African peoples and African resources that led to the rivalries that ultimately exploded in 1914. And his article that you're referring to, The African Roots of War, which he wrote in the Atlantic Monthly in 1915, remains, I believe, one of the most kind of prescient and analytically sharp, really, articles of the 20th century. And it's an interpretation of the war that I think historians today are still grappling with and only now really starting to embrace. So Du Bois was far ahead of his time.
So by the time the war is over, he's approaching things with a very different tone. He writes another influential editorial, which I've forgotten the title of, but it's like, "We return fighting." And
yeah, at no returning point, soldiers.
You know, he may say close ranks, but his patriotism is never unilateral. So he's he's very critical. Do you think he regretted his editorial? Because certainly terrible things happen and after the war for African Americans. There's a summer called Red Summer where there's many race riots as well as lynchings. There's a sense that no one's being paid off for closing ranks.
Yeah. I mean, so I divide the book into three parts. And the first part of the book is hope. And it really reflects Du Bois's hopes, his belief that the war is going to ultimately lead to a positive outcome, right, in terms of the status conditions, the democratic futures of African Americans and other peoples of African descent. That begins to immediately change when the war comes to an end. So the second part of my book is titled Disillusionment. And Du Bois' disillusionment with the war really begins immediately after the armistice when he travels to France. He spends 3 months in France during the time of the peace treaty. And during this time, he organizes a landmark Pan-African Congress, right, again, speaking to his kind of global diasporic understanding of the war, but he also talks directly with black soldiers and officers. He's on the Western Front. He's in the camps. He's hearing directly from the mouths of black soldiers and officers about the horrific racial discrimination that they experienced in the American Army, right? And these are really the beginnings of the sowing of his seeds of disillusionment that continue when he returns back to the United States, right? When black soldiers are also returning to race riots in Washington, D.C., in Chicago, racial massacres throughout the South, black veterans being attacked, lynched, some still wearing their uniforms. This is the Red Summer, right, that Professor Bay was referring to. So he has to reckon with the immediate failures of the war and its outcomes. During this time, he writes what I think is one of his most powerful books. It's called Dark Water. He published this book in 1920, and in that book, he asks, and I'm quoting here, how great a failure, and a failure in what, does the World War betoken? And it's a remarkable question that he's asking as early as 1920. And I structured the third part of the book around this theme of failure and how Du Bois has to reckon with the weight of that failure. And ultimately, he tries to do that through the writing of history, through the writing of his own book on the history of the war.
So would you argue that this failure really shapes his life? It's sort of like his white whale. He never quite escapes it.
I would argue that. Yeah, I think, and failure is such a powerful and messy way to think about Du Bois. I mean, Du Bois is, I mean, if, hopefully we kind of know who Du Bois is, but Du Bois is kind of the quintessential figure in the Black intellectual tradition in many ways. He's just a remarkable individual. He lived 95 years. He was born in 1868 during Reconstruction. He died in 1963, literally on the eve of the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. Just a remarkable life, and was at the forefront of nearly every major issue facing Black people and peoples of African descent. He accomplished so much, 22 single-authored books, right? So to think of Du Bois as a failure in any way just really doesn't, it doesn't fit with his image and, quite frankly, how scholars and historians have talked about him. But I do think it's appropriate when thinking about Du Bois' relationship to World War I, which itself was a failure that Du Bois supported, right? And he had to make sense of his decision to support the war, but also make sense of the outcome of the war and ultimately the type of world that it created. I mean, Du Bois titled his book The Black Man and the Wounded World, this incredibly evocative title, which is why I wanted to use it for the title of my book, because it was just so good. But I think he's asking a profound question, right? What does it mean to live in a wounded world? What does it mean to live in a world that's wounded by war, by racism, by white supremacy, by empire and colonialism, by economic exploitation? All of these legacies of the war that he was trying to write about, but at the same time living with. And that was incredibly difficult for him to do.
Well, I think one of the many great things about your book is you show that, you know, he's a man who's able to write all these books, but he's so much struggling with this one. It's not like he, you know, puts it in a back drawer and forgets about it. He's sort of constantly thinking he's going to come back to it, and it does make it seem like it's very central to his psychology. But I also wondered, you know, how he lives in a world in which war continues. There's the Second World War. He becomes someone who is, in some, you know, to some degree known as a peace activist.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
where does he fit his, you know, like, does he support World War II? What's his trajectory after that?
Well, as I argue in the book, really reckoning with Du Bois' relationship to World War I, right, and thinking about it through this book that he never finished is central to his political and intellectual evolution. In 1951, the federal government tries to put W.B. Du Bois in jail. He's 83 years old, and he is indicted by the federal government for being, as they termed it, an agent of a foreign principle, of essentially being a spokesperson for the Soviet Union, simply because he was advocating for peace. He was part of a short-lived organization called the Peace Information Center, and he was essentially persecuted by the federal government for his peace activities, right? It's a remarkable evolution from the Du Bois who in 1918 is encouraging African Americans to close ranks and forget their special grievances, right? So I think to understand where Du Bois is in the 1950s, when he's at the forefront of the anti-war movement, of the peace movement during the Cold War, during the atomics arms race, we have to understand what World War I did to him. Right, and how that changed his views on war and ultimately steeled his convictions that under any circumstances, war was not the answer to advance humanity.
But correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't he actually support blacks going to war a second time in World War II?
He does, but very grudgingly.
Very grudgingly.
He's under no illusions during World War II that there's going to be any positive outcomes mm-hmm. in the war. And I'm paraphrasing. He says black people didn't have democracy before this mm-hmm. war, and they're not going to have it afterwards. He recognizes that black people are going to need to do their part. They will do their part like they have in every other war, but they're not going to get anything out of it. And the world ultimately isn't going to, mm-hmm. to get anything out of it.
So he's begun to see war as just sort of the fatal error that mankind is perennially plagued with.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Do you think he sees a way out of that? Like, or is that just this struggle that he ends on?
Again, by this time, Du Bois is in his 80s. I mean, he's still very active. He's still intellectually sharp. But he really commits the later years of his life mm-hmm. to peace activism and aligning himself with the radical left in that mm-hmm. in that cause.
Okay. I mean, one of the other great things your book does is sort of make us rethink his intellectual trajectory. One of the books he's best known for is this massive book, Black Reconstruction, which you contend is kind of written as part of a pair with The Wounded World. Black Reconstruction picks up at the end of the Civil War and looks at African-American history within a global context and looks at the class struggle and sort of what this means. And it becomes, as you explain it, a bit of a prequel to what this book that he's sort of mostly already done with The Wounded World, which he never finishes. So I'm just wondering, in thinking of Black Reconstruction this way, which is new to most people, how do we mm-hmm. think of that particular book differently?
Yeah, it's fascinating to think about this monumental history that Du Bois writes, Black Reconstruction, and its significance mm-hmm. in the work that we do. I mean, it's arguably one of, some people would say, the most important book mm-hmm. Written in American history in terms of shaping the field of Reconstruction studies. He's wrestling with the history of the First World War at the same time. He's writing about the World War at the same time. And themes of black military service, of citizenship, democracy, also run through Black Reconstruction mm-hmm. As well. Right, as well as thinking about the global implications of Reconstruction and its premature demise. You know, he argues that if Reconstruction, you know, had been committed to mm-hmm. as a program, then the issues that arose by the late 19th century, one of them being European imperialism and colonial exploitation, would not have happened. Right, mm-hmm. And in some ways, the origins, kind of one of the roots of World War I itself, you know, lay in the failures of American democracy, you know, with the premature demise of Reconstruction. So he's thinking about these two monumental, pivotal moments in black history simultaneously, right? Viewing them as kind of the kind of linchpins, right? In thinking about the evolution of democracy for black people in the 19th and into the 20th century. One of these books he ultimately finishes, Black Reconstruction, right? The other one, he doesn't. And I think it's very telling that he was able to view Reconstruction as history, right? Mm-hmm. As something that he could actually make sense of, whereas World War I, for him, was still very much the present. It was a history that he was himself a part of, and its legacies continued to unfold really day by day throughout the interwar period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but it is kind of amazing. I mean, he gets through Reconstruction, which is equally massive and complicated in kind of short order. Yeah. Do you think it was like a psychological block that had him stuck on this particular book?
Yeah, I think as historians, we always are weary of getting mm-hmm. into psychoanalytical
but it is analysis tempting in this
case,
right?
Of our subject matters. But yeah, I think that, you know, there was a major psychological hurdle, barrier, that Du Bois faced in writing about the history of the war. As I describe it in the book, you know, he suffered from a type of intellectual shell shock when it came to the history of the war, that, you know, his support for it, you know, was so beguiling. I mean, he writes about being ashamed of his lack of foresight in supporting the war, right? Reckoning with this incredible guilt of supporting this horrific war, which he described in his own book as a scourge, an evil, a retrogression to barbarism, a waste, a wholesale murder, right? So he's, I think, genuinely guilty, confused, right, about the decisions he made. And he's reckoning with that. And ultimately trying to reckon with that through the best way that he knows how is to write about it. And ultimately, the war as a historical subject, as a moment, is too big, too disillusioning, and ultimately too tragic for Du Bois to complete.
Yeah, and I guess he also has one of the things he has the weight of is all this testimony that people have shared with him and the, you know, the black soldiers he talks with and who send material to him,
yeah,
you know, are very sort of bitter about the war and also feel strongly about their contributions to it, which is one of the really interesting things we learn about in the book. One of the things I'm thinking is both your first book and this book really dwell on the issue of black patriotism. And I'm wondering, in sort of taking up this issue in the wounded world, did you feel like you learned new things about black patriotism?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it really reinforces what a fraught issue black patriotism has been historically and how it still remains today an incredibly fraught issue. I mean, really what Du Bois is wrestling with in his book, and which I wrestle with in my book, is what does it mean to support a country that does not support you? What does it mean to be loyal to a country that does not respect your rights and even your very humanity, right? And black soldiers really embodied that. Du Bois recognized that, and he wanted to understand that, right? And that was one of the challenges that he faced in writing about the subject matter, especially considering his close personal proximity to it and his close relationships to many of the men who he was writing about. As I said, he travels to France immediately after the armistice, right? He's talking directly with black soldiers and officers. They're giving Du Bois letters, diaries, photographs, military documents, imploring him to tell their story, to write the history of the war, to defend their legacy, right? To refute all the lies and racist smears that are starting to come up about their service and heroism, right? Du Bois is carrying the weight of their expectations on his shoulders, and at the same time, they're investing in him. So he has to, again, reckon with that responsibility in writing his history. And it gets very complicated. Many of the men over the years, as Du Bois never completes his book, they ask him to return their materials back to them, and he very selfishly refuses to, because he believes that these materials are better off in his expert hands, and that one day he's going to get his book done. And most of those materials are still sitting in an archive at Fisk University to this day. So the relationship that Du Bois has with black soldiers and veterans, his own relationship with, as you said, this question of black patriotism is very complicated.
I can see why it's very fraught for him.
Yeah.
Well, I'm getting signals to sort of take questions, which I would love to do. Go ahead.
So the question is the interwar period, the aftermath of World War I, the interwar period, the crushing of the labor movement, the failures of decolonization. Did Du Bois wrestle with that? Absolutely, and that was part of his disillusionment. As I said, Du Bois organizes a series of Pan-African Congresses in 1919, 1921, 1923, you know, really incredibly important in laying the groundwork for the decolonization movements that emerge by the late 1940s and into the 1950s. But he's seeing no results from all of his efforts. No fruit is being born from his labors throughout the 1920s and 1930s. So he becomes, you know, increasingly disillusioned with the the potential of his Pan-African movements, just because European imperialism and colonial exploitation has remained so entrenched, right? The relationship between Du Bois and the left. You know, initially, he's kind of very skeptical of the Russian Revolution, of revolutionary Marxism, kind of has a guarded relationship with the Socialist Party. But by 1926, when he travels to the Soviet Union for the first time, his politics begin to shift and evolve. So from that disillusionment, he begins to become more radical. Right, and ultimately seeing the Russian Revolution and the Soviet Union as one of the positive outcomes of the war itself. So yeah, so Du Bois's kind of reckoning with all of the failures of the war throughout the interwar period, you know, which I talk about in the book. Many of them are deeply personal failures, many tragedies as well, shape his disillusionment and his growth over the years.
Considering that he was the founder of the crisis magazine of the NAACP, which received funding from the NAACP, how did they, and I know he was a brilliant man, he had an acerbic personality, how did anyone, after he left on his own to go to France at the end of 1918, for 3 months without permission, and he kept on demanding more money from the NAACP to write the book they never wrote, mm-hmm. and all kinds of other issues that he brought up. How come even though he was friends with Spingarn, how come he wasn't ever fired? And he finally quit in 1934.
Right.
But the only reason he quit was because of something he wrote.
Right, right. Du Bois was very difficult to work with, to put it mildly. There were many moments in the early history of the NAACP where he was on the brink of getting fired. But you have to keep in mind that the NAACP was, in terms of its leadership, was a predominantly white organization. And Du Bois was critical to their success and their legitimacy as a civil rights organization and making inroads amongst African Americans, particularly African Americans in the South. When James Weldon Johnson joins the NAACP, it really begins to expand into a true national organization. So Du Bois was essential, indispensable to the NAACP, despite all the headaches that he caused. And even after he returns from France, I talk about the post-war issues of the crisis that he published in the book in May and June of 1919. These issues are incredible, right? The circulation of the crisis skyrockets to over 100,000 readers, right? So even while the NAACP is wringing its hands and like, oh my God, what are you doing? You're writing returning soldiers. We return fighting. I mean, what? Calm down. He's still bringing in new members. He's bringing in money to the organization. So even all of the challenges that he created for the NAACP, he was still vital to its success.
First, thank you. It's an incredible book.
Thank you.
And then my question is, I guess, both about Du Bois and about you writing about Du Bois, is there's all these little breadcrumbs that feel like you're tiptoeing around, and then you just sometimes just say, and he didn't really have a lot to say about women. And he had a few infidelities. And then he took care of his wife and his daughter. But it felt like there was a carefulness, or is there really no story there about, while he's got all this almost band of brothers as advisors and friends, that women really were just these not even secondary characters in his whole life?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I think David Levine Lewis, in his monumental two-part biography, he goes into quite a bit of detail about Du Bois' personal life and his relationship with various women. And I think it is fair to say that I was kind of tiptoeing around some of the more salacious parts of Du Bois' life, particularly his personal life. But I did want to make it clear in the book that this is Du Bois is very masculinist in his thinking, his behavior, but also how he's conceptualizing history and the history of the war itself. The very title of his book, The Black Man and the Wounded World, you know, really speaks to how he viewed the history of the war and ultimately the history of the race kind of through the lens of black manhood, right? And how in the process, he did silence the voices of black women activists like Ida B. Wells and black women who were also writing about the history of the war. So it is a story about Du Bois's certainly kind of patriarchal sensibilities, but also how manhood, you know, was one of his blind spots, I would argue. Yeah, so thank you for that question.
I found it hard to understand the optimism of Du Bois with his patriotism in the early, 1910, when 100 years later, all the prejudice that Obama faced as a president, doubting his citizenship simply because he was a black man. Mm-hmm. I just find it very difficult to understand when we're still 100 years later, black people are still treated as second-class citizens.
Yeah, I think that's completely valid. And there were people at the time who felt similarly, absolutely. Du Bois, I believed, placed himself in a tradition of African Americans using war and using military service specifically as an opportunity to gain civil rights, right? Whether it was in the American Revolution, right? Certainly in the American Civil War, we could think about Frederick Douglass, for example, how Frederick Douglass encouraged black men to join the Union Army, let the black man put the brass letters U.S., on his chest, and no one can deny that he is a citizen and deserves his freedom, right? Du Bois was placing himself in that tradition of black leadership and thinking about the war, this war that Woodrow Wilson said was going to make the world safe for democracy, right? As a moment where black people could again prove their worth, prove their citizenship, right? Prove their fitness for full democratic rights, not just in the United States, but on an even larger global scale. So I think as challenging as it is from our 21st century 2023 perspective, when we are still dealing with the failures of democracy, the realities of black people still being treated as second-class citizens, that this was a moment where Du Bois and many other African Americans believed that there was a possibility that this war would make a difference. And ultimately, we know now that it didn't. Du Bois realized that it didn't. And that's why this was so challenging for him to write about and ultimately to come to terms with his own failure.
Though I do like to think that African Americans learned from World War I, because what's really striking, yeah, as you move into World War II, people are literally saying before the U.S. even gets involved, African Americans are saying, well, if we fight in this war, we are not doing it for nothing. We are, there's got to be a whole game plan.
Absolutely,
So do you think Du Bois is part of that, or do you think he's sort of like,
It's interesting. I didn't expect the book as I was writing it to go into World War II, but I kept finding all these different connections and Du Bois continuing to keep talking about World War I. He just couldn't let it go. So World War II arrives and he's still talking about World War I, right? And he's saying, here we are again, you know, fighting another war, fighting other people's battles for us. But, you know, he wasn't really a part, interestingly enough, of the Double V campaign, right, during World War II, where you have the black press and African-American civil rights organizations, you know, making the argument that, you know, we're going to wage a Double V, you know, victory against fascism abroad and victory against racism at home. Du Bois, especially before the United States enters the war, you know, sees this as ridiculous, that there's no reason to even be fighting, you know, or even thinking about supporting this war whatsoever, based on the horrors of World War I. Now, ultimately, the United States and African Americans are pulled into it. But as I said, Du Bois is under no illusions that there's going to be any positive outcome, you know, out of World War II.
So earlier in the talk, you mentioned that Du Bois had this maybe sort of a critique, maybe just like a thought that like the war might have consequences as regards imperialism, and that the war was in some sense the result of or related to imperialism. And you said that that view was sort of marginalized during the war and really only had purchase on the left. And so when I think of some of the other figures on the left who had shared that view or had similar views, particularly like Lenin, mm-hmm. they also tended to believe that the war was pitting the European working class as well as people from the European powers' colonial holdings against each other in a war that didn't benefit them. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if Du Bois engaged with that critique at the time, and if so, what he had to say about it.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And you know, certainly Lenin's piece is kind of right there with Du Bois's African Roots of the War. I think what makes Du Bois unique in his argument is that he does not absolve the white European working classes from complicity in the origins of the war and its ultimate outcomes, right? He recognizes the seductive power of whiteness, right? And how European capitalists, you know, used, you know, whiteness as a way to essentially bring the European, you know, white working classes into a type of, you know, solidarity with them, right? You know, really seeing them, you know, because of their capitulation to racist propaganda and the dogma of race, as he describes it, you know, being equally guilty, right, in the outcomes of the war, right, by essentially co-signing European imperial exploitation in Africa and elsewhere and benefiting from it, you know, even if it was not materially, you know, through the psychological wages of whiteness, as some of our whiteness scholars would characterize. So I think that race analysis, right, particularly when it comes to identifying whiteness, is really an important distinguishing factor in Du Bois's interpretation, you know, as opposed to others like Lenin and other folks, intellectuals on the left.
Well, I think we're winding down. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about your next project?
The next project. Well, at some point, if the stars align, I would love to put together some type of maybe edited collection or volume of Du Bois's manuscript and materials. I think it's an incredible archive and important contribution to our understandings of Du Bois and his work. Also thinking about some other projects related to Black Studies and its development and some of the current debates and even controversies related to Black Studies today. But I'm sure whatever I do, Du Bois will still be involved in some capacity.
Well, I think anyone who's read your book, I think we're all looking forward to seeing The Wounded World. And so I hope you do manage to put it together. Thank you so much for talking to us about it. And thank you all for coming out tonight.
Thank you very much. This is great.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.